This is the first call of the senior division. Our topic today is going to be talking about handling your finances. You know, because when blindness comes, sometimes it makes it hard to do what we once were able to do in terms of reading and handling everything that just kind of relates to your own personal business. And we have a special guest, Mr. Rob Burns.
Yeah, my name is Bob Burns. I'm a lawyer and a financial planner, and I've been a lawyer for over 30 years and a financial planner for over 25. So have a lot of experience in these areas. And, you know, I want to help people give them some good basics. I won't be able to, you know, help you become a great investor if you know nothing about investing. That's kind of beyond the scope of this, but I can give you some directions and some ways to, you know, so you can, you know, help yourself become a better investor. But the main thing is in setting up some general areas that I wanted to talk about, I have five areas that I think we'll see how long with me giving a presentation, taking some questions, how far we get. But the first one I wanted to talk about is powers of attorney, basic will, estate planning. The second one is, you know, what is your income, knowing your income. Three is knowing your assets, where are your assets. What are your bills, when are they due? And if you need help with your finances, you know, how do you, you know, proceed to find someone to help? So the first area is, you know, some of some of my presentation is going to be, or most of my presentation actually is going to be relevant to anybody, whether you have any kind of visual impairment or not. But then I will throw in some, you know, some aspects about the visual impairment side, because that obviously affects, you know, how we work in these areas. But the first is the powers of attorney in estate planning. Now, everybody, once they become a legal adult, should have a medical power of attorney, and as we get older, it's more and more important to have a financial power of attorney. Now, the financial power of attorney can be general, it could be springing, or it could be limited. A general financial power of attorney gives someone, you give someone the authority to basically stand in your shoes and make a financial transaction, apply for government benefits, be able to do things that you could do yourself. Now, typically, this is something that you need when you become incapacitated. Now, when you start losing your sight and have issues with the sight loss, you know, you really, you know, if you don't have any other mental problems, once you get some skills, you should be able to, you know, not necessarily have to rely on someone giving somebody financial power of attorney, but definitely financial power of attorney extends to the time when, you know, when we do become incapacitated. Then the third kind of power of attorney is a limited power of attorney. And that's, you know, like at your bank, you can sign somebody up as your as a signator, somebody that would just have the ability to, you know, draw on your account to help pay the bills. That would be a kind of a form of limited power of attorney. Or you could have one put together yourself if you wanted to give, you know, someone the ability to, you know, interact with a given account, or, you know, a CD's coming up, give them the power to cash in that CD. You know, limited power of attorney can be very specific, you know, to do one thing, or it could be, you know, just centered on one, you know, one account. But anyway, having a financial and medical power of attorney is something that everybody should do at some point. And since we never know when that point is, it's good to have these things in place But again, we want to be very careful who we give financial power of attorney to. We can always revoke them, but in order to revoke a power of attorney, you basically would have to send every place that you have an account a revocation. So it's a lot easier to do a power of attorney than it is to revoke it. But revoking it is something you can do at any time. It's just, you know, once you've created a power of attorney, you'll have to notify every place you have an account that you've revoked this power of attorney. So that's just a kind of a basic good practice for everybody to have these things in place, because we never know when we might need them. We might not need them for 5 years. We might need them tomorrow. So that's the first topic. And I guess if people have questions, then you can do a *6 and unmute your phone, and I'll take some questions on this topic.
I'm sorry, I just joined the conference. Can you tell me how to mute my phone?
*6.
*6, I'll mute it. Thank you.
And then *6 again will unmute it to ask a question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And so, okay, well, having no questions then I'll move on to the next topic. And when I asked Robert...
Excuse me, I have a question. I'm sorry.
Sure. That's okay.
Hi, my name is Tricia, and I know you just kind of explained it, but why is it so hard to reverse power of attorney?
Well, it's not hard to. It's basically the same piece of paper, same basic principle to revoke it. But the problem is, if you give someone financial power of attorney, they're going to have this document.
Diane McGeorge.
They're going to have this document that gives them financial power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically can present that at any place that you have an account. So if you revoke it, you have to get that revocation to every place you have an account. So
it's more time consuming than anything. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And because chances are you can never you can never assume that if you tell the person, no, I don't want you to be power of attorney anymore, giving that power of attorney piece of paper back, you can never assume that they haven't made copies. And so you have to, if you're taking power of attorney away from somebody, you need to revoke it, and the only way to do it properly is to notify every place that you have an account that you have revoked it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for explaining.
Sure. Okay. So that's the first topic. The second topic is, what is your income? Oftentimes, in a family situation, one spouse or the other, generally you never see both spouses equally doing everything. I mean, it just never seems to be that way. So generally one spouse does maybe the finances or most of the finances, and the other spouse does other things. Well, kind of Murphy's Law, the spouse that does the financial is usually the one that, dies first and or becomes incapacitated. So now it's just you. And it's a pretty scary situation when you don't know anything about much of your finances, and now you're starting to lose your sight also. So it's double scary. Well, the thing is, don't panic. I mean, just be systematic, because this all this stuff is not just random serendipity, just conjured out of thin air. All of this stuff is organized and can be systematically understood. So the first thing is to your income. What is your income? Well, if you're getting Social Security, how much is my Social Security check each month? And then it's important, of course, that everybody have a way of putting information in a place in a way that they can access it. Now, if you have computer skills, there's beautiful software that I use. JAWS myself. I'm 100% blind. JAWS works great for me, and there's Window Eyes If it's my understanding that the new Microsoft Office has Window Eyes possibly built right in. So I just heard that, so I can't swear it, but I I just heard that. But anyway, so that would be a way to, you know, not even have to spend any extra money other than having Microsoft Office to have a voice software. But if computers are completely scary and you know, you don't know anything about them, first of all, there's a lot of senior computer classes and clubs. A lot of times down at the library, you know, there's some places out there you can get some basic computer skills. But it's, you know, that's kind of beyond the scope of my presentation, you know, to but there are ways of getting some skills, whether or not your state, you know, commission has some you know, training that you can take advantage of. But somehow or some way, you need to have a way to be able to access important information. Now, back in the old days, before, you know, these computers became so accessible, I used to use, you know, a tape recorder, you know, a lot. And I never use a tape recorder anymore. But, you know, for many years, I used a tape recorder. Now, of course, tape recorders, you know, you can start putting information on it, and it's, you know, it's not as easy to access sometimes if you got a long, you know, tape. But you can use a tape recorder to, you know, tape record account numbers, dollar amounts, contact information. And so everybody ought to be able to use a tape recorder. So it's you know, it is kind of one, you know, a low skill technique to, you know, access your information. And so if you can, you know, get your, again, you need to go through what is all your income. Is there a pension? Is there Social Security? You want to know, you know, what the amount is. You want to know their contact telephone number. So if you have a question, if you're getting, you know, whatever your source of income is, you want to know what the amount is and what the, you know, how to get a hold of them. And so that's the first, you know, organizational step is in this process, is figure out your income and know how to get a hold of these places. So you have a general sense each month, you know, what your automatic income is. So that's the first step is, you know, figure out what all your income is. I mean, you know, what deposits are coming into your checking account, you know what those are. And you know, be able to access those account numbers and contact information, whether you do it through Braille, whether you do it through tape recorder, whether you do it on your computer, and then make a file. And you know, the other thing is be organized. I mean, it's more important than ever when you're losing your sight or lost your sight to be organized, because papers are, you know, unless you have each piece of paper labeled, it's difficult. You can easily get them mixed up and lose track of them. So if you have a dedicated folder for, you know, certain assets or certain accounts, you can keep that information in that given folder, and then you need to have some way, you know, to mark that folder. You know, there's also there's like a tube of a substance that you can kind of like squirt out and like make raised letters. You know, that's something that I've used that in the past for like marking wash machines or things. So there's ways of, you know, if you don't have Braille skills and you can't see, you know, ways of making a tactile identification on your file so that you keep things organized. And you know, that's very important, because, you know, you need to be able to know where you know how to get a hold of these things. And then again, if you have the contact information, you know, you can always call the source and talk to them about it. And along with know your income, you know, the flip side of that is, what are your bills that you know, your utility bills? I mean, do you know, a lot of times you can set your utility bills, I know probably everywhere you can, to do a monthly average rather than have the bill be whatever it is each month. It kind of takes the annual, your utility bill, and then averages it over a 12-month period. So, you know, not only know what your income is, but know generally what your monthly bills are, so that you have a sense of what's, you know, going on with your cash in, cash out. And so same thing, you know, you want to know your utility, you know, your account number, their telephone number. You want to have that in a way that you can access it, whether it be on a tape recorder or brailled out or, you know, large print, you know, whatever it takes. You want to have that available to you also. So that basically is on that topic. The know your income and know your bills. Does anybody have any questions? If you do, mute 6. We'll take mute off and okay. Okay. The next thing is, you know, what are your assets? I mean, that, you know, short of income, or different than income is, you know, what are your assets? What, you know, where is your money? Your bank account, you know, what is the bank account number? What is the bank's telephone number? And one of the things is that if you're the spouse that doesn't handle this stuff, and you know, I obviously a huge scourge of, you know, of the seniors is, you know, macular degeneration. You know, it's kind of degenerative, loss of sight. That don't wait until you have to before you start. You know, don't be in denial about this side of life. You need to step up and understand what, you know, what, where your money is. And even if your spouse is the one that, you know, because unfortunately we can't even always assume that our spouse is on our side either. I mean, you know, many a time, I mean, you know, seniors or people get divorced and one spouse just didn't pay any attention to the assets, and the other spouse, you know, ran roughshod over things and you know, lied, cheated, and stole. So if we pay no attention or take no role in our finances, then we make ourselves a much easier target for that kind of stuff to happen. Now, when it comes to knowing your assets, you know, way back when, before I knew anything about personal finance, I started reading Money Magazine. And Money Magazine is as good a place as any. It's written for the general public. It's not written for investment specialists. And it's available through BARD, you know, the National Library Service. You can either, you know, get it, download it, or you can have it sent to you. But it's a good place to start learning some of the, because some of it is vocabulary. You know, we hear these terms, you know, money market. That was the first term that when I was in college and in law school, you know, what is a money market? I had no idea. No one ever defined it, and it was, you know, way before Google. But anyway, it was the first financial term that I came across that I had no idea what it meant. And so that's when I started reading Money Magazine, that helped me, you know, learn about this financial vocabulary and these financial principles and lots of general good personal finance information. So this is an aspect that we may not be, you know, it may not be the most interesting to us, but it's one of the most important aspects of our life is our finances. So we totally ignore it at our own peril. if we have want people to totally take care of us and us to just be, you know, helpless bystanders, then, you know, we're at the mercy. I mean, if people take advantage of us and cheat us, you know, it's shame on us, because if we just totally take no role in a responsibility in our finances, then, you know, we're setting ourselves up for problems. So Money Magazine is available to everybody. That's, you know, it's, I mean, you can buy it on the newsstand, but for visually impaired people, blind people, it's available through BARD, available through the National Library Service, and it's a very good personal finance magazine. So it's a way for us to start, you know, learning some things about personal finance and getting some ideas, because most of us can benefit from, you know, hearing some good ideas. Now, as far as our financial accounts, if we have an account someplace, we have the right to call them, and they will talk to us about our account. If it's an investment account, we can call them, and they will tell us what our balance is. They can tell us, you know, things about our account. Now, they're not going to explain, you know, how to invest as a rule. I mean, that's generally not what they do. But if we have an account someplace, an investment account, they will, you know, if it's at a mutual fund or at an insurance company, they will explain what it is, tell us how much we have in it, how much we, you know, how would we access it. So regardless if we're not comfortable with a financial planner or working with somebody, if we have money someplace, we can contact the source, and they will talk to us about our account, tell us how much we have, you know, review transactions. Now, anymore, every place investment has websites. I mean, and most of them are pretty accessible. If you're using a computer, whether magnification or voice software, so being able to access your stuff through your computer is, you know, for the most part, it's pretty accessible. If you have computer skills. If you don't have computer skills, then, like I said, you need to know where your money is, how to contact them, what your account number is, and you can call them and have them explain to you what you have, and, you know, take notes, you know, keep track. But basically, you need to know where your money is, and not just be, you know, completely clueless as to where your finances are. And you do have the ability to call the places where your money is. Typically on your bank account, they want to know your last deposit, I mean, in order, you know, kind of a security. So again, you know, if you keep track of that, then, you know, you'll get past their security hurdle and, you know, be able to talk to you. If you can't answer that, you know, and you told them that you were blind and visually impaired, and, you know, you can't look it up, I mean, you eventually would get, you know, through. But if not have to go through that whole process, you know, if you know your last deposit, that's generally what it takes to kind of for your security, to get past their security, if you just call your bank direct. So that's, you know, is the next topic, is to know your assets and then learn something about your assets. And like I said, where you have the money, they can, you know, do a lot of explanation. I mean, they're not going to, you know, explain to you what bonds are typically, you know, if you're calling a mutual fund. But on the other hand, they'll answer a lot of questions. And so that's a good resource that we all have, where our money is, the institution where we have it is. They will talk to us and explain to us, you know, answer our questions. So does anybody have any questions on that that general topic? If so, hit mute 6 and it'll take you out of mute and you can ask a question.
This is John.
Okay.
I have a question about, I understand everything you're saying here, but I was wondering what happens when you got two spouses that don't agree with what should be paid at, you know, at any given month. But I mean, I've had people ask me this before. How do they get their spouse to come around to their way of thinking, or you give up and go to their way of thinking?
Well, some of that's marriage counseling. Obviously, a bill. I mean, a bill that's owed. I mean, there shouldn't be too much debate on it. It's and most problems with personal finance are if you have ample amounts of money, it makes everything a lot easier. If you're having to balance, you know, if you got more debt or more bills than you have assets and income, then it can be trickier. And so maybe if you have a bill due and you have the money, I mean, obviously you should pay it. If you have three bills due and only enough money to pay two, then and one thing about I'll answer this two different ways. One is the thing you should never do when you can't pay a bill, never just ignore it. Call them and start a dialogue, negotiate with them. Say, you know, the bill is $50. Can I send you $20 this month, and I'll send you $20 the next? And because more often than not, if you call them, they will negotiate with you. Sometimes people get, you know, like medical bills especially, where they get a big medical bill and, oh my goodness, they can't pay it, and so they just don't go to the mailbox. They just ignore it. That is the worst possible thing, because almost always medical providers will write off some of the debt. If you call them and you know, tell them your situation, tell them your lack of resources, that almost always they will at least help you come up with a payment plan and possibly even, write off, part of the overall bill. But if you don't call them and just ignore them, then they're pretty aggressive. It'll go to collections, you know, within a couple months. And when it's gone to collections, there's no longer any negotiating.
There's no negotiating.
Yeah, the institution that you owe the money to, they will negotiate, usually, almost always. But once it's turned over to collections, it's a totally different thing, and now the flexibility is gone, and they're just after the money, and they want full payment, and so don't ignore bills. Even if you can't pay them, call them and tell, you know, say what if I send you $10? I mean, if you communicate with them, they almost always will work with you. So the worst thing you could do is just ignore it, you know. So your other point about, you know, what if there's just difference of opinion between spouses on things? Well, part of it is like anything is if it's something like, you know, investing in something, well, you know, maybe you do have to compromise and help persuade your spouse. There's so many different possibilities of what you could be talking about whenever we have a relationship with someone, we, you know, all of a sudden we're not a free agent anymore. We have to, you know, work with somebody else. So we need to compromise and be willing to, state our case and not just, you know, what we say goes. I mean, we have to convince them. And, you know, generally that's where you want to kind of maybe map out some goals or some plans as to, you know, what you're exactly trying to do or accomplish, and try and find common ground with your, you know, your spouse, and just a lot of communication is the best, and hopefully that, you know, one person just doesn't totally shut down and won't talk. you know, unfortunately, sometimes that leads to, you know, divorce. I mean, it's when you hit an absolute impasse, sometimes it happens, and you hate to see it, but you have to find a way. And generally, you know, the old Ben Franklin approach, write the pros on one side and the cons on the other. I mean, it's, you know, these are tried and true methods that worked over the centuries. And it's a way to, you know, move a topic along productively and not, you know, cause, you know, too much conflict. Does that help? Help at all?
Sure.
Okay, somebody else have a question?
Well, I have a comment.
Yes, it did.
This is Tony Whaley. When you know, all of our investments and stuff, I was the beneficiary, and my husband was the main investor. And could you address, I mean, I found that when he passed away, it took some, well, depending on what company you were dealing with, one company where we had investments, you know, I told them, and they said, well, they made an appointment for us to come, for me to come in, and in 2 hours they had it all straightened out, you know. There was another company that it took me 6 months to get it all straightened out.
Well, I mean, some of that is just, you know, customer service. I mean, some companies are better than others. You know, it's really the squeaky wheel. Now, the one thing, if it's an insurance company and they're giving you a runaround, you need to, you know, tell them that you're going to report them to the Department of Insurance. I mean, if you're a beneficiary, it's pretty straightforward, and you're entitled to have the money transferred to you.
Well, the problem is, of course, I mean, part of the problem is that, well, you know, you're grieving at this time, and it's a hard thing to try to do all this while at the same time you're grieving, and you need some access to some of that money, you know, and
the first thing to do is, you know, once you've died, is contact the company and find out what their claim process is. And, have them. Now, also, make sure everybody, if you're not asking the question, that you have the *6, so you mute your phone. Because with so many people on the phone, it, you know, just people breathing and different things, it kind of adds a lot of background noise clutter. So, you know, the star is to the left of your 0, underneath your 7. If you hit the star and then 6, it'll mute your phone and, you know, take out the ambient noise that just exists when lots of people are on the phone. You're right. I mean, it's you know, people you know, you're grieving, and you know, it's but a lot of that just boils down to customer service. That some companies have you know, better customer service than others, and it's unfortunate, but you know, you just have to be persistent. But the main thing is, you know, when you contact them, you know, say you want the claim packet, and they generally have the packet they send out that then lists out all the things that you need to provide them. And you know, the other thing is, if it's, you know, a company that's giving you bad customer service, it's probably something that you're going to want to move after you've made claim for it, because, you know, that's your leverage with anybody you do business with, is you move your money to someplace, you know, that's got better customer service.
I have a question. What is the difference between having being a beneficiary with your spouse, or an account that you can get paid upon death? Which would be easier to deal with?
Well, it's really 6 of one, half a dozen of the other. But it does. I mean, there really is no difference. Typically, a beneficiary is on a insurance policy or a retirement account, IRA. The pay on death is just something that can be added to a non-qualified account, like, you know, a bank account, just your general bank account.
Okay.
So, you know, the result is the same as far as they'll go to, you know, the beneficiary or the pay on death at death. If it's a qualified account, like an IRA or different things, a beneficiary has other options than just getting the money. like a spouse, if it's an IRA, a spouse can convert it into their own IRA, their own spousal IRA. If you're a non-spouse beneficiary and it's an IRA, you can convert it into a beneficiary IRA. There's some different rules with that. But the key is, you know, and it goes to back to that, my first point about the power of attorney. A lot of people don't realize, you know, they think, well, you know, I'm listed as beneficiary on all these accounts, so I don't need power of attorney. Well, beneficiary only comes into play after the owner has died. So say it's your spouse and you're the beneficiary. Unless your spouse has died, the beneficiary has no access to that account.
Right.
And you'd need the power of attorney to be able to access that account if your spouse is still living or the owner is still living. So that's why it's important to have a power of attorney, and because, you know, even though you're listed as beneficiary, the beneficiary has no rights until the person has died.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Sure. Any other questions on, I guess we're doing the know your assets.
Would you address, whether spouses both names, could you go into that a little bit?
Excuse me, what was the question again?
I'm not explaining it well. Discuss about just having your own checking account. Do you believe that it should be that both spouses have their names on that account? Because if one becomes incapacitated and you don't have your name on there, then you can access that account. Now, I'm putting my own spin on it. You'll talk about it better than I will.
Yeah, so it goes to, if an account is joint, then, and you're, you know, a husband, wife, or, you know, whoever, if it's a joint account, typically it's got rights of survivorship. What that means is the first person, as long as one of those two people is alive or are able, then they can access that account. If the first person dies, then the joint owner doesn't have to do anything. It's just still their account because it's a form of ownership that survives one death. So your joint owner, you know, if the first owner dies, the other joint owner doesn't have to do anything. It's still their account, full access.
I knew I wasn't phrasing it well. I wanted to take it to another point. Both are still living, but one is severely incapacitated.
Well, as far as, you know, are you talking about like Medicaid planning?
No, I'm just talking about a plain old checking account.
Well, a plain old checking account, if it's, as long as it's joint, then the person that's severely incapacitated, you know, the other person can still access the account and deal with it. If that person that's incapacitated, now if they have a separate power of attorney, then
right.
Someone could access that account also on
yeah.
You know, standing in their shoes.
Right.
So typically if you have a joint account holder, the other joint account holder, as long as they're able, is not sufficient because they can take care of the account. I think I might have heard the word IRA. With an IRA, you know, IRAs are not jointly held. They name a beneficiary, and that's where it's important to have a power of attorney, because on an IRA account, if, you know, the husband, say, has a stroke, becomes incapacitated, the wife may be named as beneficiary, but she can't access that account while he's living. And if he's incapacitated, then he can't do anything about it either. So that's why it's important that they have a power of attorney, giving her power of attorney, so that if he becomes ill, she can access that account, regardless if he's, you know, still living. Once he's died, then it becomes her asset. When the owner is living, there's no power of attorney, and they become incapacitated. Everybody else is kind of in limbo because you own an account. It's yours until you die. And if that's why it's always important to have a power of attorney to give someone the ability to, you know, access an account on your behalf if you're incapacitated. Any other questions? I'm going to move on to this last. If you need help with your finances, you know, how do you find somebody to help? Everybody has different amounts of assets and a different situation. I mean, typically, if you and your spouse have a financial advisor, it's important that financial advisor be both of your advisors. Don't let your spouse be the only one that interacts with them, and you don't know anything about anything. Make sure that you talk to that financial advisor if you have questions, so that, you know, maybe your spouse knows more of the, you know, the details on things. But it's important that you at least know some basics. And your financial advisor, if they treat you poorly and just kind of ignore you and just deal with your spouse, well, you know, when your spouse is gone, that financial advisor's, you're going to have no time for them either. So you want to, that's one of the things you want to determine while your spouse is alive, is do you like this financial advisor? I mean, did your spouse pick them and you don't like them at all and they don't like you? If that's the case, then you might want to consider, even while your spouse is alive, to find a financial advisor you both like. But on the other hand, if the financial advisor is just kind of ignores you and doesn't, you know, isn't responsive to you, then you want to get away from them after your spouse has died, because you want a financial advisor that you can relate to and answers your questions and can deal with your needs and needs. So the first thing is, you know, while your spouse is alive, if you guys have a financial advisor, get to know them and have them explain things to you. I mean, that's their job. And maybe your spouse knows more about it than you. Maybe your spouse isn't as good as an explainer. But the financial advisor should be a good explainer. And so make sure you just don't stick your head in the sand and let your spouse do everything with them and you know nothing. Like I said, learn what your assets are. Don't wait till you have to do this. You know, do it in advance when there's no crisis involved.
Right. Think you have assets.
So first of all, you know, so the financial advisors that you have now, you know, ask them questions and be comfortable with them. Okay, say you don't have a financial advisor, and now, you know, you got this other issue. You're losing your sight, and you're feeling even more vulnerable and helpless. Well, you know, first of all, where is your money at? You know, that again, I mean, if you should know where your money's at, so if there's a financial advisor involved, then get to know them and see if you like them and get your questions answered, you know, while your spouse is still around, so that you can, you can have some support. If your spouse is gone and it's just you, then, you know, it's, and again, you know, hopefully you've set some of the foundation so that it's, you know, it's not a complete, you're not coming at this cold. But say you are. Say, you know, you didn't follow my first steps, first one, two, and three, and now we're, you know, spouse has died, you're losing your sight, now what? Well, again, you got to get organized. Where's your income? What are your assets? Call these places. Have them tell you what's in your account. Tell them your spouse has died. What do you need to do to get the account to the beneficiary? How do you make a claim? You know, you need to go through your accounts one at a time, contact the places where the money is, and find out, have them explain, you know, how much you have and how you would access it, and have them help you with that. then if you do want some help, you know, say, gosh, I really would like to have a financial advisor. You know, if you have enough money, you know, there's certified financial planners out there that you can, you know, look up in the phone book, or, you know, that basically just charge you a fee to give you financial advice. And so you can find a certified financial planner in your area and interview them and see if you like them. If you don't have a large amount of money, then you have to, whenever you're taking on a financial advisor, you have to be very careful. You can get referrals, from friends, from, who find out who they use. And then the key is when you're sitting down with a new financial advisor, the thing is you need to be careful that if they immediately start talking about, well, we need to move everything because what you have isn't good, and you need to be very careful.
Yeah.
Because a financial advisor that wants you to start moving everything is kind of a red flag.
Biggest fear is, what am I signing?
And so you need to find out, what, when you do things, what is the cost? Everything has a cost. Like some insurance products have a surrender period. You put your money in, there's no cost up front, but if you take, depending on how you take the money out, there might be a surrender penalty. So you need to find that out. Is there an upfront cost? Is there a cost if I take money out? You need to ask those questions and understand the answer before you...
they have a bathroom in here.
Before you do anything. And so, getting referrals for financial advisors is a good, because if you have a friend or a neighbor that has somebody they like, obviously they can vouch for them. They've had a good experience. But the number one thing that you got to be careful about is if you get a financial advisor and they start wanting you to move everything, and it's important that you generally want to move slow until you understand kind of what's going on. And you want to understand the cost of the things that you do, because everything has some kind of cost. It's whether or not it's an upfront cost, a back end cost. Everything's got some kind of cost. It's important that you understand what that cost is. And ultimately the result is the most important thing. So just because something has a cost doesn't make it bad. But you need to understand what the cost is when you when you're making your investment choices. And like I said, if you have a good amount of resources, maybe a certified financial planner, which you can look up in the phone book, and see and make an appointment and go interview them. If you don't have a substantial amount of money, then ask your neighbors where you bank. Oftentimes they have investment help. The thing you got to be careful though at your bank is, even though it's your bank and they got your checking, your savings, that across the lobby, the investment guys they got over there, they're not necessarily any better or worse than anybody else. Just because they're sitting in the bank, you can't be guaranteed that they're totally the best, or going to have that everything they say is going to be completely objective and completely reliable. So,
Mr. Burns, we have like 2 minutes left
hour. Yeah,
I'd
so
we could go.
It, yeah, so it's going fast. So, does anybody have any questions on what
Brad
we talked
Lowe's?
About?
Brad Lowe's.
Okay.
I don't have a question. I do have a comment, and that is I know that if you get yourself into financial difficulty where you just seem to have more bills than you do money and you're kind of overwhelmed, there are financial counselors that deal specifically with that issue, and it does, and those people don't charge for what they do. One entity that I'm familiar with myself was a place called Consumer Credit Counseling Service. And these are people who are volunteers. They're successful business people, and their objective is to help you get out of debt, and they will help you to organize your finances, talk with the people you owe money to, and help you to come up with a plan to get yourself out of debt. I haven't talked with these people for a few years myself. The last time I knew, they didn't charge for that service.
Well, and Brad makes a good point. One of the things that you've got to be really careful about is places that want, you know, upfront money.
It is.
You know, on that, because you really got to know what you're getting into, because many of the places that are fraudulent get, you know, a bunch of money up front, and they you know, end up not really doing anything for you. And so, again, I mean, you need to, you know, check with the Better Business Bureau. You know, what Brad says, you know, counselors that are doing things for free, I mean, it's, you know, it's not to say that there's not good ones out there, but whether it be free or whether they charge, you got to be careful. You got to do your due diligence. You need to check with the Better Business Bureau. Say, you know, tell them who you call the Better Business Bureau. Say, do you have anything on, you know, this particular business or entity? You have to be very careful because, you know, it's there's a lot of people out there that are preying on, you know, the public. And So you have to be careful. You know, you generally, as a rule, on the phone, you don't want to be given, you know, so your personal information out. You know, if you're calling the places that have your money, that's different. I mean, you got to be able to trust them. I mean, if your money's at XYZ Mutual Fund and you call them, you know, that's not who you need to be concerned about. What you need to be concerned about is, you know, somebody that you don't have a relationship with, or you're just starting out, and you got to be careful with what information you give them on the phone, especially because there's a lot of, you know, con men and fraudulent things going on out there. So, any other questions? Well, hopefully, you know, you guys got some. You know, some good basics from me. You know, again, the whole thing is to have a good systematic approach that, you know, and hopefully I gave you a way to come at this stuff systematically and, you know, just deal with them one at a time and not be so overwhelmed by everything at once. If you break it down and start dealing with things one at a time, it fits together easier and better. And that's the way to get your hands around it, is just, you know, tackle what you have one thing at a time.
Hello?
Bob, I'd like to say, you know, this is
a lot of good information, and thank you very, very much for your...
Yes, that's what I wanted to say. This was just very good, and I thank you for taking your time to do it for us. It was great.
Well, I hope I gave everybody some good, you know, sound, you know, foundational...
Yeah, I'm going to get Money Magazine. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, it's a good, you know, consumer thing to learn some more about these subjects, because these subjects are, you know, are things that we all need to know more about than we probably do. And
exactly, but I always thought it was for economists. You know, I never thought it was written for me. You know,
yeah, it is. I mean, sure, it's.
Oh, that's great.
You know, yep, it's designed.
What happened is, you know, your blindness can happen all of a sudden, and there you are, from lack of planning. Now you have to rush and try to get your life in order. So
right, and you know, most of the people that I deal with are not blind.
Oh, okay.
But believe me, it happens. All these things happen to totally sighted people too. I mean, you know, one spouse does all the finances, and they're the ones that die. The other spouse just kind of was perfectly happy to let the other spouse do everything.
Mm-hmm.
then something happens to them, and now they're just as, you know, messed up as anybody. And you know, of course, if you're losing your sight, then you have lost your sight, then you have, you know, another issue. But don't wait to the end. I mean, put your arms around this stuff right away, as soon as possible. And that way, when something happens, as it will, I mean, nobody gets off this planet alive, is the way
no.
I like to put it, that something's going to
happen.
Not
only just for rich people, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is all of us. Whether we got, you know, $100 or $100,000, it's how much we got, and we want to do the best job we can with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.